Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The April 21st regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and please be seated. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at that time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a blue speaker card and give it to staff. If you're participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item, and if you wish to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain that you wish to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the blue speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. The first order of business is the approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Bold second.
It's been probably moved in second. We'll go to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next is notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments, which there are none. Next are items requested to be removed from the final agenda, which is a GDP, I think it's a GDP, not a GPD, GDP with variance at 49 Orchard Street.
Motion to remove GDP with variance, 409 Orchard Street.
Steve is second.
So we've probably moved in second. We'll do this as a voice vote as well. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. There are no items requested to be withdrawn, so we'll move on to the consent agenda, which is the approval of the March 10th, 2026 MPC meeting minutes and minor subdivision recombination at South Gardens 1206 East 68th Street.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Bold second.
It's been properly moved and second. All those in favor? Any opposed? We have no old business, so we'll move right into regular business. Number four, minor master plan amendment at 166 Basswood Drive.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and the members of the board. My name is Subhashi Karunaratna, a planner from MPC. I'll be presenting the staff findings and recommendations for 166 Basswood Drive, which is a minor master plan amendment to the general master plan and PD ordinance of the Highlands Park Godley Station North Plan Development. So the request here is to add two uses to the PD text, which is public, institutional, and office, in that office designated area, which is marked with this green section. So this has 57 acres and a large amount of parcels. And the first inclusion of the use, which is a general services, would be applied to all this land use, and the second use, which is proposed, which is indoor amusement with accessory food services, would only be applied to 166 Basswood Drive property, which is highlighted here. The PD has been through four previous amendments, and this is the fifth one, and right now, when these are the uses that are allowed in the public, institutional, and office land use section. This is a concept plan of what is proposed in this location. So the general services, which is the first use proposed to be added, is explained as an establishment generally providing personal, business, or financial assistance to customers where tangible products are not customarily or principally produced or sold, unless they are created or customized on an individual basis to customer specifications. This is an existing explanation for general services in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance, and this use is allowed in multiple zoning districts, including the TN, downtown district, office and institutional districts, and business and industrial districts. However, the indoor amusement with accessory food services is not a existing use. So the best interpretation of this use would be a commercial and a recreational use conducted within enclosed structure that provides indoor play and entertainment activities for children and family. And this is not a childcare service, and children should be accompanied all the time by a parent or a guardian, and no drop-offs are permitted. The proposal for 166 Basswood also has accessory food and beverages services requested at the site. So this service would only primarily be for the patrons of the indoor amusement use, but is open for public as well. It is not supposed to function as a standalone restaurant or a full-service dining establishment. So this is a concept plan. It would need to go through the city engineering and the site plan review. Right now, it has access through Basswood Drive, and there's about 50 plus parking spaces provided in the site. And there are two uses, which is an office in this yellow, and then the indoor amusement and food services on this left building. There's also a stormwater easement at the back of the property, and everything regarding the site plan review will happen after they go through this master plan amendment. And we received quite a lot of neighborhood support for this project, and based on its suitability in the PD and the neighboring property, which is a school, which is located right here. MPC staff recommends approval for this text amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here? Please step forward. Please state your name. You've got 20 minutes to present if you wish.
Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Carlson. I'm the petitioner at 166 Basswood Drive. Good afternoon, and thank you for your time today. I will keep this very short and sweet. My name is Molly Carlson. I'm a resident of the Highlands area of Savannah for 11 years, a business owner for over 8, and the future owner of the property at 166 Basswood Drive. I want to take a moment to express my appreciation to the MPC and the city zoning staff for their guidance throughout this entire process and for the recommendation of approval. I'm here because I care deeply about this community and about the kind of spaces we're creating as it continues to grow. What we're proposing is an indoor play space with a cafe designed as a true third space, a space where families can gather, connect, and spend time together and with others outside of their home and work. Right now, there are very few places where young families can go that are safe, welcoming, and built for both children and adults. This fills that gap in a way that's thoughtful, intentional, and community-focused. I believe good development isn't just about adding buildings, it's about adding value, creating places where people feel connected, where relationships are built, and where a community can thrive. That's what this project is about. I'm proud to invest in my community in a way that brings people together and I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? I don't think I've got any speakers for this. All right, then I'll, no rebuttal, so I'll open the floor for a motion.
Move to approve.
Bowles, second.
It's been moved by Ms. Jarrett and seconded by Ms. Bowles, so we'll take it to a vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries.
Got it, okay.
Thank you. Next up, we have number five, GDP with variance at 2120 New York Avenue.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Eli Zarka, senior planner with the NPC. And before you, you have a GDP with variance for 2120 New York Avenue. This is a minor subdivision to create two non-conforming lots from one currently conforming lot that also has an existing structure on one side. Here is the future land use and zoning map. The future land use is residential single-family suburban, and the zoning is RSF6. Here are the standards as well as the presented plot plan. As we stated in our pre-meeting, this is not a survey. But this is showing the dimensions of the property as well as roughly where the house location is. The RSF 6 district requires 6,000 square feet and 60 feet in width for each of the lots. The proposed lots would both be under. One is proposed at 50 feet in width and 5,000 square feet, and the other is at 55 feet in width and 5,500 square feet. The house would be remaining on the larger of those two lots. The house should remain in conformance. The new property line is going farther away from the side of the house because it is so close to one side of the property. It should remain in conformance with this new property line, but we do not have a survey, so we cannot confirm that detail here. As the subject property is not of an irregular size or shape and is currently conforming to the standards within the RSF 6 district, NPC staff recommends denial of the following requested variances associated with a non-conforming minor subdivision of one lot into two lots. That would be the reduction of minimum lot area from 6,000 square feet to 5,500 square feet for lot A and 6,000 square feet to 5,000 square feet for lot B. The second request is the reduction of the minimum lot width from 60 feet to 55 feet for lot A and from 60 feet to 50 feet for lot B.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here? Oh, they're online. Okay.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. If you could state your name for the record, and you have 20 minutes.
Good afternoon. This is Kaveh Malakuti. With me is my spouse, Veronique Lariu. We're co-owners at 2120 New York Avenue. Thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. What we submitted here was a subdivision of the lot for the purpose of building another dwelling on that same lot. I understand that it is currently not in conformance what we're requesting, and it's a deviation. However, we've supplied at least 22 properties within the few blocks radius from us that have undergone the same subdivision, and they have resulted in similarly and in some cases drastically lower than 6,000 square foot lots to create dwellings for the neighborhood. As you know, this is a neighborhood that it's up and becoming, and there's a lot of demand for rental as well as owning properties in that area. And we'd like to contribute. We'd like to add another dwelling on that property and have another nice family live there. Today, it's just a piece of land that sits next to a house, and it's just weeds, and we have to just maintain it. But we're hoping that with your approval, we'll be able to set up a nice family home there and have a nice dwelling for a family there. So that's our request. We kindly ask that you consider the other deviations that we've provided as a reference for what has been done in the past. Some of these lots are as small as 3,200 square foot, or maybe even 3,500 square foot within on New York Avenue itself. And so I'm hoping that what we're asking with respect to a reduction to 5,000 and 5,500 respectively for each lot is not too far out and we get approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
Quick question for staff. Did staff take a count of any properties around that are existing that are less than the 6,000 square feet?
Yes, we did. I went kind of a few blocks over, scattering through. I didn't find any subdivisions that we had reviewed recently or an application such as this. I may have missed one. From what I could see, and this is, again, just a general comment, a lot of the structures were built decades ago, some as early as the 20s and 30s. So supposedly they would have been developed and split into those lots back then. I can't answer for all of them, but I didn't find any applications such as this recently nearby.
So no recent subdivisions, but from a contextual perspective, does it appear that there is a number of properties or a good count of properties that would potentially be non-conforming if they were kind of assessed now?
Yes. A bunch of them would be very close to what they would need to be, but still under. And a pretty decent amount of that area is also conforming. This lot is a little bit larger than it needs to meet the minimum standards. There are a few other lots in this area that are of a roughly similar size. So it is not completely irregular in that nature. But there are lots that are definitely smaller in that area.
Oh, thanks.
Mr.
Is there a survey for this lot?
No, there is not as of yet. We have requested one from the petitioner. They requested to come forward to the meeting today without that survey.
Thank you.
Mr. Melder.
How would this request be viewed had the housing density overlay extended into these districts?
In that case, it would have given us an aspect of policy to review it against favorably, even if it was lower. I'm relatively new, so I'm still learning all of our ordinances, so I may defer to the director if I'm missing something.
Yeah, I mean, because it didn't, we didn't have anything from our standpoint to go by except the ordinance. And one of the things that you don't want to do is to create zoning by subdivision. That's one of the reasons that we escalated up to this board to look at. But because we don't have an overlay or anything that gives even this board technically any room, we've had to review it very strictly based on the ordinance. I will let you know that one of the things that we discussed was I'll be sending you a memo to look at giving the board of us the authority to do a plus or minus 10% in cases like this where people are trying to create lots to support more housing. We don't have that in place right now, but that is something that I would recommend that we do, and it's pretty straightforward from an amendment.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson, I understand the policy basis. Just for education here on my part, the non-conforming lots that the petitioner cited in and around the current the subject property, and then your review of those non-conforming lots, would that be, and this is another question for Ms. Wilson, is that kind of what we talk about when we say making housing types legal again, where we once had those different types of density types?
I think that that's something that could be done when the land use plan was done and the zoning was put in place. It was based on what was thought to be appropriate at the time, which was that land use piece was done probably 8-9 years ago. We know that there are things that are changing with regards to how people are living and how development is occurring. But one of the things that we look at is the fact that, again, you don't want to create zoning by variance.
Right.
So while you had those nonconforming conditions that existed, that was taken in consideration when the zoning district was placed on those properties at 6,000 square feet apiece. So that's where we stand right now.
Would you think that these districts here, specifically in the third district, would be candidates the city should consider extending the housing density overlay into?
To be candid, I think that it's area by area. I wouldn't say that it would be the whole third district.
Sure.
I just meant this neighborhood specifically. I think that that's where having a neighborhood plan at a more detailed level would help. Because if you had a neighborhood plan and the folks in the community understood what the implications are for having more density, then yeah, I would say the neighborhood, not only the comp plan, but the neighborhood plan basically supports having more density in these areas. It makes it very easy for us to recommend approval of this. If we had that in place, then I would have just probably signed off on it because I would have had a policy document that supported what they're asking for, but I don't have that, which is why I'm glad that you are going to start doing more neighborhood planning, because it allows these pockets where you have these neighborhoods that could have, you know, that have larger lots to have a little bit smaller lots or different development patterns to support allowing that.
Thank you for the answers.
Do we have any other questions from the warden? I don't have any speaker current. I think my main concern is just that we don't have a survey of this. And I think I don't know how comfortable I feel voting on it without that.
Yeah, I tend to agree because just looking at the map, it's a mixed bag. Like there are several properties that are 53, 45, that, 60.
And you find that all over the city.
Right. And then there's a ton that's 70 and up to 130 foot frontage. So, I mean, I'm kind of torn on a definitive position as to whether or not this is appropriate or not.
I think that, you know, We're trying to increase housing. I think this is a good, reasonable subdivision. You know, it's within just the margins of what the area is zoned as, but just not having the survey is a little, I don't love making that approval without that.
Would the applicant be willing to postpone and do a survey for us?
That's a good question. Is the applicant still online with us?
Yes, if I may. I have contacted surveyors. We're just a couple of weeks out. Ideally, as you understand, the cost of a survey is north of $5,000. And so I was hoping that if there's a favorable ruling, given the current understanding of what the lot is, if it's possible, get an approval on the condition of supplying a survey. And, so would be a conditional approval if you're favorable to that outcome. And then we'll obviously submit the survey as soon as it's completed.
Sir, if you're paying $5,000 or $6,000 for a survey, you may want to shop around a little bit more for surveyors. That's quite high for.
It is my first time, so yes, I understand. I am looking for better options, of course. Yes.
Okay. I think, notwithstanding the financial burden, I still think that we would like to see a survey, but we are now at discussion. We can move into making a motion.
Yeah, it could take 6 weeks to get a survey, but it's certainly not $5,000. In my 25 years of real estate, there's a much more economical way to get a survey done. There are a lot of survey companies that will do it for substantially less.
And ultimately, it's going to have a survey in order to do it anyway.
So the floor is open for a motion.
We can continue for two meetings, which was date specific, June 2nd. I move that we continue the petition to the June 2nd meeting.
June 2nd.
Okay. All right. It's been properly moved and seconded. Motion is to continue it to June 2nd. Tracy?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Ms. Hammack.
Sorry. Yes.
Ms. Bowles.
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett.
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The motion carries.
Mr. Chair, before we move forward, if we could just add a little piece of clarification. It doesn't necessarily have to be a part of the motion, but for the petitioner's satisfaction or edification, just making sure that that's clear, that it's for the purposes of seeking a survey.
Including the survey within.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Next, we have GDP with variance 2254 Vicksburg Drive.
Okay. As stated, this is 2254 Vicksburg Drive. This is another GDP with variance. Reminder subdivision to create two non-conforming lots from one currently vacant conforming parcel. Here is the property's future land use and zoning map. The future land use is single-family suburban residential, and the zoning is RSF-10. Here is a depiction of the property as well as the standards with which to regard it as far as RSF-10. RSF-10 requires 10,000 square feet and 70 feet in width. These lots are proposed are the same exact size of 50 feet in width and 7,500 square feet each. There is no structure on these properties currently, either planned to be demolished or not. It is currently vacant. And as the subject property is not of an irregular size or shape and is currently conforming for a lot within the RSF-10 zoning district, the MPC staff recommends denial of the following requested variances associated with the non-conforming minor subdivision of one lot into two lots, the first request being the reduction of minimum lot area from 10,000 square feet to 7,500 square feet, and the second being the reduction of the minimum lot width from 70 feet to 50 feet.
Sorry, is the petitioner here?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, Josh Yellen representing the developers Vanguard Development. From the development company, we have both Andrew and Ryan who are here with us today. I bring them up because they've actually walked the neighborhood talking to neighbors. Most of the neighbors were in support or indifferent of the project. There was no concern. Particularly, and this will be part of the discussion, since there are numerous houses in the area that maintain the same lot width or even smaller than this, including the two properties kind of to the north of the site, which are the exact same dimensions within the exact same zoning district. Vanguard, as you can see, they are here, they are local, they are a development company, and primarily, and you've seen them before, and I've represented them here before, they are focused on exactly this type of development, which we would call a gentle infill development. They are here to bring in new density to create single family homes on Vicksburg Drive, which is located, for those who don't know, between Skidaway and La Roche, kind of just north of Duran. So this minor variance that we are requesting is to request a reduction in both lot area and lot width to accommodate residential infill. And this is the type of variance that y'all have seen many times. Recently, and I know this came up in the pre-meeting, these variances have coming before y'all. Previously, they all went to ZBA. There has been a shift in these petitions, but these petitions are not new. Since 2023, developers have been requesting these lot area variances and lot width variances because there was a reinterpretation of the zoning ordinance at the time, having to do with lot area per unit versus lot area. The ZBA made the determination that single family homes are allowed to be varied, and that's kind of been by right since that time. They went to ZBA, but recently the interpretation from the city has been, oh no, if it's going to be two lots, you need a general development plan, and a general development plan needs to come before the MPC. So often if it's a single home, it will go to ZBA. If it's two lots, it comes before y'all. So we kind of get a myriad of responses and a myriad of different opinions on the appropriateness of these variances. But to be clear, they happen all of the time. This is probably the 10th one that I've handled, and I know that y'all have four of them today on the agenda, and we're seeing more and more of them more and more frequently. particularly because developers in this regard are responding to what we are seeing from the community. They're responding to seeing the action that we have received, that we need more infill housing, that we need more single family homes, and that there is a suitable way to do it that does not create urban sprawl. And one of them is to find existing oversized lots, to subdivide them, and then to put two single family homes on them to have that gentle development. And to the point about, is this considered in our comprehensive plans for the region? I think it absolutely is, that both the comprehensive plan and the Housing Savannah Action Plan specifically call out that we want to create gentle housing, gentle infill housing, missing middle housing, and that we should target this housing in areas that already have existing developments such as here. This is within a single family community, and we are creating two new single family homes here. It also should be mentioned that the lots that we are intending to create are actually very large. They are going to be 50 by 150 feet, 7,500 square feet, which still allows for a large single family home to be on both parcels, consistent with the homes around them. This lot itself is oversized for the area, and that's kind of the common theme that you see with these types of subdivision requests, that we have lots that for whatever reason were created, they were recombined previously prior to the zoning ordinance, and they are oversized based upon their surroundings. And so we see people targeting these oversized lots, trying to reduce them in scale to gently infill the housing in a way that's in keeping with the area. And so what you can see here is that we do have the two single family homes here that were subdivided that are the exact same lot width and lot size that we have. The homes immediately adjacent are also would be considered quote unquote non-conforming for the RSF 10. They don't meet the lot width requirements. While I know that these RSF 6 homes are in a different zoning district, each and every one of these homes in the vicinity is smaller than what we are proposing to do today by the subdivision and lot area variance. I counted 15 lots being approximately 16,000 square feet. 14 lots in this area are 7,200 square feet. The ones that I was talking about immediately to the north, which are 57 and 59 St. John's, those are exactly the same at 50 by 100 feet, or 150 feet, I should say. And so even with a 50-foot lot frontage, as we're proposing, these lots can support significant high-quality single-family homes. Even with the 7-foot setback on each side, it's still kind of a 36-foot wide building envelope to work with, which does create a very substantial home. We have seen these variances, as I've mentioned, numerous times on all over the city is also the point to mention here. These are not concentrated in one district. They are in every area where we do see larger footprints. And it should be repeated that it is contemplated in our comprehensive plan and the Savannah Housing Action Plan, where strategic infill and redevelopment along existing infrastructure corridors is encouraged. And as was stated in those reports, duplexes, cottages, and importantly, small lot homes specifically are required to satisfy the 40% of Savannah's households that are currently cost burdened. That's kind of the quote from the action plan. So in conclusion, I think that this project is actually the definition of gentle increase in density. It utilizes the existing infrastructure in place. The infrastructure is there. It's apparent. And it will help create two quality single family homes on lots that are larger and more conforming than many of the standards that are surrounding it. To force this 15,000 square foot lot to remain a single home site creates kind of an island of underutilization. Our request for 7,500 square foot lots is a reasonable compromise that aligns with the neighborhood's residential character and also satisfies the requirements for a minimum variance to make the property's use viable. We would respectfully request that you approve of these two variants as they do meet the requirements of the ordinance and are in line with the City of Savannah's plans. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Ms. Jarrett.
Mr. Yellen, do you have a survey for this lot?
So this is kind of, again, a new requirement. I've handled many of these petitions before where we have not come with a survey. And I'm not trying to be kind of cavalier about that approach, but I've seen from y'all we've come in for if it's a two-lot subdivision, three-lot subdivision. Sometimes we ask for 50, you say 60 feet, sometimes 44 feet, sometimes 50 feet. And so we have a plot plan that we have put together. I will say that this one is very different than the prior request, which had a single family home on site. And I understand the need for a survey to make sure that the setback adjacent to the existing structure can meet fire code and standards. This one, we're trying to put a lot on directly in the middle of an existing 100 foot wide lot. And so we are able to have a better estimate without having the need to add in the setbacks and buffers. But the formal request for a survey is not one that we had previously seen for many of these other applications. No, ma'am.
Any other questions? I had one speaker card. Lyndon Henley online. Ms. Henley, if you're there, you may go ahead and unmute yourself and you have 3 minutes.
She's unmuted.
She's unmuted?
Yes.
Ms. Henley, are you there?
If I may, this speaker has also sent in a written letter of opposition, so I can bring that up if they are not able to speak in the meantime.
Ms. Ellie, are you there? All right. That's the only speaker card that I have. The letter of opposition is there on the screen. So at this point, it's not really any testimony that's been given, so there's no real reason to rebut it. So I think at this point we move into board discussion. Anyone?
These are getting tougher and tougher, truthfully. We do have the need for more residential properties, but again, I'm gonna push back. Mr. Yellen normally does an outstanding job presenting these things, and he did again today, but I want to push back a little bit on the oversized nature, because if you look at the context, yes, there's quite a few 60 foot lots across the street. And again, a very good point well taken, that the depth of those lots are 50 foot difference. But if you look around it, it's a lot of 100 plus lots frontage over there that makes it a little bit more difficult for me to just immediately go and say a 50 foot lot is appropriate.
Yeah, and just in general, you know, we have these zoning districts, and if we're going to drastically reduce the size of the lots, then I think at some point we have to holistically look at doing a rezoning of that whole area. What is the point of having RSF 10 if we're now turning them into RSF 7 or 6 or 5? That last petition, we saw some of those that were RSF 3 in an RSF 6 district. So I think at some point we do need to kind of look at all of these neighborhoods and reassess. Even in my own neighborhood, I see a lot of that. The zoning starts to become irrelevant if we just allow these things. And I think that while I could support that kind of change, I don't know that this is the method to do it.
The concern that the resident brings up too about drainage in the area is definitely a concern for me. Right now it's a wooded lot and we're talking about putting two residential structures on it with driveways, reducing the permeability in the area.
This is big picture from a realtor's perspective. It changes the feel of a neighborhood. And I often put myself in the shoes of a resident there. And if I was next door to this and that was my home that I'd enjoyed some space, you know, I would have a problem with it. And I think you have to respect the existing homeowners first before we start in every neighborhood splitting lots because we need more housing. And I feel very strongly about that.
Any other discussion? Ms. Wells?
No, I was just thinking about the previous conversation, and we talked about whether we would consider permitting the MPC to do a plus or minus 10% on some of these when they make a decision, and I think this is even beyond that.
All right, if there's no more discussion, the floor is open for a motion.
Move to approve staff recommendation.
Jeff Nutrika, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded to approve the staff's recommendation, which is for denial. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nutrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
No.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. All right, next we have GDP with variance at 489 Gold Street.
Hello again. So again, this is 489 Gold Street. This is another GDP with variance to create two non-conforming lots from one parcel that has, one legal but non-conforming structure. The current lot is also still non-conforming as far as lot width. Here's the future land use and the zoning map. The property is zoned RSF6, and again, single family residential suburban. Here is a survey of the property and the RSF6 standards. I understand the survey is a little skewed. The property is it crosses north-south from one block to the other side. Historically, it was actually two lots that were combined some point in the early 2000s. They are proposing to essentially add the property line that would go through the middle of the block to separate this back into the lots it was prior to that combination. Part of this property was originally part of an easement or a lane, but that has since been abandoned. Even back when these were combined, that had already been abandoned at that point. So that is not necessarily a concern today. As the subject property is of an irregular size and shape for a lot within the RSF6 zoning district, MPC staff recommends approval of the following request of variances associated with a non-conforming minor subdivision of one lot into two lots. The reduction of minimum lot area from 6,000 square feet to 3,483 square feet for lot 22A, and from 6,000 square feet to 4,960 square feet for lot 23A. A reduction of minimum lot frontage requirement from 60 feet to 35 feet for lot 23A and from 60 feet to 49.8 feet for lot 22A. 23A is the smaller lot on the north side of this property. That is the proposal. 22A is the larger lot on the southern half of this parcel, or at least the proposed lot.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here to speak? Please step forward and state your name. You have 2 minutes.
Angie Scott, and my brother is also online. My name is Angie Scott, and I am one of the co-executives for this property, and we're just simply trying to put the lots back to its original form because they were separated. They were combined, in 2007. And I think my mother probably did it just for tax purposes.
Gotcha.
But in our opinion, if we were to sell the lot that the house is on, then the person would also get the other lot as well. And we don't want that to happen. So we felt that we needed to request that it's subdivided once again. And I'll yield for my brother.
Okay. Any questions? The only speaker card I have is her brother. So.
Oh. Is he online?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Mr. Scott, if you have anything to add to that.
Yes, I would like to add that the lot on the on I guess the South Street side, the house to the west is actually the family house, and the house to the east is actually I own that house, but also to execute the will, my mother did not realize that both lots were connected, so she. In the will, she requested that the lot, I believe that would be 22A, be divided. But we could not do that because of the, and we have a surveyor already hired to dispense of the lot per the will. But we needed to get the waivers for the variance, which certainly, as was mentioned, the lots are already non-compliant. So. We're simply trying to execute the desires of the will.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. All right. Any questions for either of them? I don't have any other speaker cards, so there's no rebuttal on this one either. So open it to discussion.
I think this is one of the ones where it makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, yeah,
frontage lots are always kind of weird.
It's pretty apparent if you look at the context. There are a lot of lots that carry the same size, frontage, and that's not a pretty lot to try to develop. So this one makes sense to me.
And this is just kind of restoring back to 2007?
Correct. Mm-hmm. This one makes sense.
All right. I'll open the floor for a motion.
Just to extend my condolences to the family.
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. Move to approve staff recommendation.
Jeff Nendrick, a second.
Been properly moved and seconded. We'll go to a vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The motion carries.
Thank you.
Next, we have GDP with variance at 2119 Hagwood Street.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm Subhashi Karunaratna again. Here, it's another GDP with variances for a subdivision in RSF 6 zoning district. Here, the applicant is asking for four lots, and the width of the lot is about 122 feet, and the depth is about 100 feet. We don't have the exact measurements and therefore cannot properly predict what the variance should be, because now he's saying it should be like 31, 31, 31, and 32 for the four lots that he's proposing. Based on reviewing the variance criterias, we failed to find any special conditions or circumstances applicable for this property. It looks like the hardship is based on the chosen design of splitting the property into four lots. This lot can be split into two and be conforming in the RSF 6 zoning district. And two conforming single family houses can be built here. And they require the area as well as the width reductions. So because a conforming subdivision can be made here, the MPC staff is recommending denial for this request. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here to speak? Please step forward to the microphone and state your name, and you have 20 minutes.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Peter Barrett, and I'm the applicant for the subdivision variance at 2119 Hagwood Street. I'm here to make sure that my submitted variance package aligns with MPC expectation and address any questions. My goal is to create buildable residential lots that are consistent with the surrounding development pattern and to improve underutilized parcel and bringing it into productive residential use. I've spoken with neighbors and collected support to ensure the subdivision aligns with the community expectation and The goal is to improve and underutilize parcel, bring it to productive residential use. As I said, the public benefits is to revitalize the underutilized parcel. I think I would be able to get the 3,000 square foot lot because there's a whole bunch of them in the neighborhood. I mean, I bought the property with the intention of subdividing it because it was a huge property with one house in the center of it. But based on everything that I've seen going on, I see that it's going to be declined. But I also have a proposal for three lots, if that would be considered.
Don't say it's declined before we vote on it.
Okay.
Yet.
Okay. So that's pretty much what I got to say.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the petitioner? I do have one speaker card. You need to sit down, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Lucille Jackson. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Lucille Jackson, resident of Hudson Hill, the president of Hudson Hill Community Organization. My address is 2132 Fox Street. I'm standing in place of most of the executive board members and some of the residents that I have spoken with and that we've had our board meeting, and they were not in agreement with this lot being split into four single family homes. We have looked at that lot daily. It's right behind my house pretty much. So I've walked around there and I looked at it and I said, how can you put four houses on this lot? Unless maybe we want to make it a tiny house community. That's the only thing I could see. I did not ask the developer how many rooms he was planning, bedrooms was planning to put in these houses, so I don't understand how four houses could be put on that lot. We were saying that they were too close together. We didn't know where parking was going to be for four houses on one lot, let's say. The house size, like I just said, the bedrooms. We've been talking about density a lot, and density for Hudson Hill, we don't have a supermarket there because they say our density does not approve, align with getting a supermarket. Well, we just don't want houses thrown there just so we could have density. And with that being said, I'm just saying that we are not in agreement with four lots being put on that property.
I have a question.
Yes.
Knowing that you can only speak for yourself and not the whole neighborhood, of course.
Correct.
Do you think that three would y'all be more amenable towards that potentially?
Possibly, or two. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I heard him say, you know, three, that he would consider three. That makes me wonder, why would you even consider four from the beginning when you realize that three would be more conducive maybe for the area?
Right. I understand. You think it might be more conducive?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ms. Bowles?
I was getting ready to do the math.
three is still significantly off what the existing zoning is currently. Yes, Ms. Wilson.
Yes, so three would have the width of about 40 feet, and the zoning district is
RSF 6, I believe, which requires 60 foot.
Yes, width. 60 feet. So mm-hmm. Divide it. And three would be
33 1/3%.
Yeah,
off.
So it would still be. Mm-hmm. I can't do that math, even though I got a calculator.
Yes, Mr. Stevens.
And to that point, once you start getting into the setbacks, you basically got a shotgun house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm relatively familiar with the area. There are not a lot of shotgun houses around there.
Mr. Chair, if I may add, the 122 feet is the SAGE's measurement. It's not the accurate measurement because we don't have a survey, so the okay. number could be different.
So we also don't have a survey. All right. If the petitioner would like to come up and rebut the public comment, you may do so.
Yes, sir. Shotgun houses are exactly what I was about to put on it. I've been working in Hudson Hill here since 2023. I've built on 6,000 square foot lots. People in the neighborhood normally drive around and they're interested in buying homes, but once I'm done, it's out of their reach. That's why I'm thinking of making smaller homes because more people can afford mid-$200,000 homes. Now, if I'm supposed to be in the 6,000, they're going to be in the 300,000, and it's going to be people from out of state all over buying. So that's why I was thinking about four. And that's the only reason I was thinking about four. I know it doesn't look doable, but that's the only reason I was thinking about doing four. It's because I'm thinking about the community. But shotgun house is exactly what I'm going to do. It's going to be between 1,300 to 1,500, three bedroom, 2.5 baths, and it's definitely doable.
That's true.
What are the side setbacks on the in the R6?
5 feet on each side.
5 feet on either side. So with the 31 feet, you'd end up with a 21 foot
wide house. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Parking.
Yes.
Park? Oh, my bad.
I have a process question. If we deny here today, can he come back with a different variance, or is he denied from having a variance for this lot for a full year?
If you deny today, I mean, the applicant basically could make a request to subdivide the lot into two lots, which is
– He doesn't have to wait if it's a different –
He doesn't have to come back in for that. We can approve that, and he still gets an extra lot.
Because that would be by right, correct?
Because that meets the requirements. It is the fact that he wants to create four lots that's a concern, and the three lots theoretically is a concern as well, because it's still different from the lot pattern. And one of the things I just want to say for the record, when subdivisions come in, this is the first place I've been where nobody is bringing in subdivisions that have been surveyed. Even if there's a small tweak, a surveyor can make that adjustment. But when you're approving a survey and we have to sign off on it, it's a document that becomes a legal document that gets recorded. So we really kind of need to have people submitting surveys. And if the goal is to get more lots, then, you know, you can fold that cost into your cost per lot. But that's just the price of doing business, is to get an official survey. Sages is good. I'm very proud of the work that we do on that side of the house, and we have as accurate information as possible, but we're not surveyors. It's not a surveying entity. So that's one of the things I would say that's needed. But, you know, you technically can do two lots, and that's something that we can approve in-house very quickly.
As for the survey, the only reason I didn't do the survey, my survey is over 5,000 because it's a survey and a subdivision. It's not just a survey. So that's the only reason I didn't do a survey, but I totally understand what you're saying.
You could have them just subdivide the lot. I mean, the surveyor's going to just look at the points that are part of it, because it's part of a surveyed lot. So all they're going to do is subdivide it based on the points that are already there.
Okay.
Just as some of the realtors have told you, it's just basically shooting one line in this particular case, because it's a squared up lot.
Any other questions for the petitioner? All right, we're going to move into discussion. Did you have anything to add? I'm sorry. You were looking over this way. I just want to make sure. Okay, all right.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I wasn't sure if you guys had anything to add.
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, if there's no more discussion, the floor is open for motion.
Motion to accept staff recommendation of denial.
Jeff Dondrigo, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded to approve staff's recommendation of denial. Take it to the vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Dondrigo?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. All right. Next we have a change of pace. Map amendment. Rezone TN1 to TC2 at 11 West Park Avenue.
Eli Zarka, senior planner for the MPC. So again, yes, this is 11 West Park Avenue. This is a rezoning request from TN1, traditional neighborhood 1, to TC2, traditional commercial 2. On Park Avenue at the southern end of Forsyth Park. Here is the future land use and the zoning map. The property is designated as traditional commercial in the future land use map. And the neighboring property is also zoned TC2. Some of the other areas around it are still zoned TN1 as it is, as the property is currently zoned. Here is a survey of the property. And here is a floor plan that I took from essentially the question here, and why this rezoning is here is because the applicant has essentially been using this property the way they currently are, and they're trying to bring their use into conformance. Under the, they currently have two dwelling units, a studio apartment on both the first floor and second floor, and they are operating it as a commercial office that also stretches to both floors. In the TN1 district, you would have to have the commercial totally on one floor and the upper floor residential. So that is why that doesn't conform with that district. The TC2 would allow the cross floor access for those uses, if you will. Here is the property pointed out again towards the southern end of Forsyth Park. And NBC staff does recommend approval of the request to rezone the subject property to TC2.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here?
The agent for the petitioner is.
Good afternoon, Josh Yellen again. I will keep this very short, shorter than the last petition, but the staff summary was absolutely correct that this got flagged when they went in to submit for interior building permits. The site needed a retrofit, and it came to our attention that it is upper story and lower story residential, even though it's been traditionally used as a commercial building, as far as we can tell, going back to the 1930s. It's been in continuous use, but business certificates and things like that might not have been filed for this location. We're trying to correct the wrong so we can go ahead with the interior build out and get this site to be conforming with the same zoning as its neighbor and the same zoning that's directly across the street from Bull Street and is popping up around Forsyth Park. So thank you all for the support, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you all may have.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Any questions? I have no speaker cards on this one. Any more discussion? Ms. Bowles?
Bowles, motion to approve staff recommendation.
Stephen, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded to approve staff's recommendation. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you. All right, next we have a text amendment, outdoor vending units in the OIE and BN zoning districts.
Mr. Chair and the members of the board, I'm Subhashi Karnaratna. Here we are going through the second reading for this text amendment. This is to add some additional standards and expand the vending machine to use in OIE and BN zoning districts. Currently, the vending machines, smaller outdoor vending machines, are allowed in a broader spectrum of zoning categories, but vending machines which are larger than 25 square feet are limited to BC, BN, ILT, ILN, IH zoning districts. This request is to add the larger vending machines into OIE and BN zoning districts and to add additional safety and design standards for the zoning ordinance. So I'm not going to go into much detail of what the additions are for section 8.7.22, which describes the standards for smaller vending machines. The proposal is to add additional standards for the safety and a design aspect, and for section 8.7.23, in addition to the design and safety standards, this use is being expanded to OIE and BN zoning districts. And the MPC staff is recommending approval for this text.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here to speak? Please state your name for the record, and you have 20 minutes if you need it.
How's it going? This is Robert Kelly. Really, I think the MPC did a great job covering pretty much everything, but
but I can answer any questions y'all might have.
Any questions? I do not have any speaker cards for this either. So any discussion? Open the floor for a motion.
Stevens, I move to approve staff's recommendation.
Why would he second?
It's been properly moved and seconded to, for approval. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The motion carries. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next, we have text amendment, development standards for permitted uses, and 9.5.4 buffers.
Mr. Chair and members of the board, Subhashi Karunaratna again. I have to make a clarification. We are, I'm presenting both items 26001109 and the county application as well.
Yes, thank you. Those are items number 11 and 12 on the agenda.
Okay. So this is a joint effort from the city and the county to add more standards for intense industrial buffers based on the recent developments, development trends. MPC and the city and the county staff has acknowledged that the current zoning ordinances, which contains a potential of 40 feet buffers, are inadequate for the intense industrial uses that we are seeing now. And to remedy the most urgent need, we are introducing much larger, to be precise, 100 feet buffers. So let me get to the text very quickly. So this right here is the proposal by the city. Right now, industrial buffers are required for industrial zoning, which are 50 feet within a residential zone. And the proposal right now is to expand it to 100 feet. And if the height of the residential district is being exceeded by the industrial development, then additional height will be, additional setback will be required by this claim. And we're also, the city is also proposing that this section would not be applied for marshland or wetland areas. And moving on to the use buffers, right now we have six land use classes based on the intensity of the uses. And so class one will be the least intense, like the single family housing and agricultural, like daycares, such uses. And the intensity increases while we're going through class 2, 3, 4, all the way to class six. Class six is the land use class that had the most intense industrial uses, but the city is introducing class seven, which includes these uses, the container storage yard, outdoor storage yards, warehouses, industrial manufacturing and processing, waste-related uses, mulch or compost processing, intermodal freight yards, rail yards, vehicle and freight terminal, and data centers. So with the addition of that intense use class, we're adding a new buffer type, F, to the matrix, which determines what buffer should go between which two uses. And this type F buffer would have a 100 feet buffer width, 8 feet tall berm, 8 feet tall fence, or it could have 12 feet fence and wall parallel to the berm, 30 feet planting area on the exterior side, and a minimum 20% of understory tree and shrub plantings on the berm. So this is a sketch of that 100 feet buffer, plantings and the berm and the fence in the middle. There are exceptions for this 100 feet buffer if they are in lots which are like 10 acres or less. The buffer could be reduced up to 40%. So sorry about that. I guess I have to go back to the top. Okay. Sorry about that. Very quickly. These are the land use classes that I mentioned, growing in intensity. And this is the class 7 land use class and the most intense uses being categorized there. And this is the matrix that determines which buffer is going in between what two uses. For example, if there is a residential development happening, residential zone district and a intense industrial use like a rail yard is coming 100 feet closer to this residential zone, which is classified under type 7, the industrial use would require the type F buffer. And this right here is the type F buffer development standards, and this is the buffer itself. The berm is marked with these lines showing the dip and the fence in the middle and the plantations. And for lots which are less than 10 acres, there's a reduction of 40%. And it should not precede 50% of the required buffer. And if there is a lot which is larger than 25 acres and requires a DRI, the buffer shall be increased up to 20 feet. And a fence or wall is not required in that case. And these are the berms are subjected to these standards. The slope should be not more than 33%, and there should be a crown, a flat crown of 4 feet. And there are exceptions for openings for like easements or roads to go through the buffer. Yeah, that is the city proposal, and moving on to the county's text amendment. Right now, county already has a type F buffer, so they're adding the warehouse use to this buffer, and if that is the industrial use is going to be next to a residential use, then these standards will be applicable, which are the buffer standards again. The buffer would have a 100-foot wide planted preserved area, and it's going to be in the abutting the residential property lines. There will be a 8-foot high berm and a fence on top of it, which is also 8 feet. And there are openings for easements and access will be available under the determination of the county engineer. And the buffer could be reduced up to 50% on lots which are 10 acres or less. And that is the two proposals, and MPC staff is recommending approval for both requests.
Thank you. Is anyone from the city or county here to speak on this?
Yep.
All good. Okay. I have one speaker card.
I think.
Sorry, where are the questions? Lawson.
Mr. Lawson is here to speak for the county.
Come on up, Mr. Lawson.
Come on up, Mr. Lockton.
It's like Hall of Fame.
Forget how fun this was. Well, Sabashi told you everything you needed to know, I think, about these ordinances. When the city and I started working together, this was all, as y'all know, but for the public, I guess, a result of the extreme growth we've seen in the warehouse sector and the industrial sector at large. And, you know, our ordinances were not in a position to provide the protection from a buffer standpoint and when adjacent to residential properties. So we sat down with the group and came up with these proposed changes, and I think they will benefit the county and the city at large. So I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Any questions for Mr. Lawson?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. What's the trigger for the height that, you know, a building that goes from, you know, it's a 100-foot buffer and then it goes above a certain height, then it
extends. That's a city requirement. You want to come and answer that if you want.
Yeah. Requirement.
Obviously, the next question is, how do you determine how wide that buffer would be based on the height that's now triggered it?
Subhashi Karnar again. So this requirement is, for example, if there is a residential zoning district with 36 feet height limit, and if there is a industrial development coming right next to that residential district and requires a height more than 36, they need to have, 5 feet additional to that, because I think I said it wrong. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back. So for 1 foot addition for the 36 feet, if the proposed industrial building is like 40 feet, and if that is 4 feet difference between the 36 and the 40, so they need to have, oh my gosh, no, my math is going wrong. I'm sorry.
Suffice it to say there is a calculation. It's not arbitrary.
Yes.
Okay.
So right. For additional 1 feet, they have to be set back 1 feet from the property line.
Okay. So it's not an arbitrary amount. So
thank you.
What is the measurement of the height? Is the height the roof line, or is it a silo or something else? Is it the highest point of the structure?
Yes, the highest point.
Okay.
Ms. Jarrett, did you have a question?
I have a couple of things. First, when the area requires a DRI or is greater than, I think, 40 acres, mm-hmm. we're talking about a 20-foot berm with a 3-to-1 slope, which is going to be 120 feet from the base of the berm to the base of the berm, not 100 feet. Do we have that figured into the calculations? Anybody out there?
I'm going to actually defer that question to Bridget.
The 120 feet. And are we going to do landscaping beyond the 120 feet? Or?
I'm sorry, Ms. Lady, if you don't mind coming up to the microphone.
Sorry.
Good afternoon, Bridget Liddy. It's a pleasure to be with you all here today. So with this particular question that you had, if you want to go ahead and repeat it, that'd be great.
Yes. Basically, if you are required to have a 20-foot berm, and it said shall be 20 feet, not up to 120 feet, but shall be 20 feet, that means that the base of the berm from existing grade to existing grade is 120 feet. It's going to take that much to get that 3-to-1 slope up to the 20 feet and then come back down 3-to-1 to,
yep.
to grade. So we keep talking about a 100-foot buffer, but that's 120 feet.
Based on this particular requirement, yes.
Okay. And are we going
to that's because
have,
it requires a DRI, which many of these industrial developments do
but
require.
But it's also larger than 25 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there going to be a landscape buffer as well as the berm?
There's a fence on top of the berm, and there is also landscaping that will be on the berm.
On the berm?
Yep. Berms may be modified to allow for the preservation of existing trees in accordance with the landscape and tree ordinance.
Well, that's going to be really hard with a 20-foot high buffer because you're going to have to go way back to cut that buffer, that berm down.
You know, I think we had presented some information to you all a while back, and we've been working diligently with several stakeholders in the area. And we
I appreciate
have
that.
Gone back and forth.
And I know we need to get this done. But I just want to make sure that your eyes are wide open about what this implies as far as the actual buildability of it and the potential problems with drainage. And I know that you've got access for utilities and that type of thing in there. 20 feet is huge.
Yep. And keep in mind, some of these items are going to be variable. So if a developer comes in and they're working with their site plan and they come up with a hiccup in reference to that large requirement, they can go to the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Okay.
Or if it's a general development plan, they will come to you where there's public an opportunity for the public to come in and weigh in.
Okay. My other comment is in regards to comprehensive plan and planning for industrial areas, can we please try to put something in between the industrial zones and the residential zones so this is not a problem? Commercial, office, something else so that we don't have residential and industrial side by side.
Sure, we are currently working with our partners here at MPC on the comp plan.
I know the comp plan is underway. I just wanted to get it on record that that was my desire. Thank you.
Mr. Stevens.
You made mention of, Ms. Liddy, you made mention of the various stakeholders that were involved in establishing. I just wanted to be clear, because I do have some thoughts towards the constructability of this. Were there construction professionals and or site professionals that chimed in on it?
We did run it through our development services department.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Mr. Melder.
And we did ask many large scale developers, some of whom answered honestly. And I think so we understood the constructability of it.
Yeah.
If I could add, so one, I think just to thank the community members who have been a part of this for a long, long time. I'm glad that we're here today. It's probably taken longer than it should have, but we needed to be able to run the traps. And that's where I met Amanda Wilson. That's where I met Carrie Bieber and so many folks who are working hard to improve their communities. And I think I want to thank, I think the city and the county staff and our planning leaders, both Marcus and Bridget and all our teams worked really hard to try to get something that was doable and protects the community. Obviously, we know there's more to do in terms of policy and planning, but I think this is a really important thing to do.
Thank you. Anything else, Mr. Stevens?
No, I'll just add, just for the record, I only asked that question primarily because I want it to be very abundantly clear that we are trying to serve as a neutral party. So builders and developers, we are thinking about you, even though sometimes it probably doesn't feel like it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we do have a speaker card. So Diane Brenner. And don't worry, she's in favor according to the cards.
I know. I really love these people. They've done a great job. My name's Diane Brannon. And thank you, Amanda, for kickstarting all this. I don't think we'd be here if it weren't for you. And Jay Melder, I can't thank you enough for your support in this endeavor. And you have no idea. I know y'all do, but they have attended numerous meetings. These people have worked their hearts out on behalf of the community, and this is the right thing. I know people who I've spoken with on Park and Tree who wanted to see this happen 25 years ago, but better late than never. But thank you so much. I really appreciate your help and your support and your intent. And thank you so much. And I'm wholeheartedly in favor of this endeavor, but thank you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brannon. Go ahead and throw your mic back on. hear him again.
I thought I hit it. Thanks. No, I just appreciate the efforts on all parties. It is good to see when city, county, and MPC sit down, comes up with some good language, because it's going to ultimately serve everybody in our best interest. Not saying that we don't do it, but I think we need to do it more, and we'll get a lot of positive results out of it.
Did either of the petitioners want to respond to the one speaker? All right.
I would like to.
Ms. Wilson.
So I want to say thank you to everybody that's been mentioned as well, and also Ms. Diane and the other members of Westside Alliance. This has been something that has been in the works since the leadership conference that Westside Alliance did in 2023. And I'm just so proud of the community's work that they have done in this. And I'm just so proud. And I love to see this community advocacy. And I don't know if it's just because I've in the past, since 2020 have just started getting involved in this, but it seems to me that through the last few years, there's been more and more community members coming together and advocating for their neighborhoods and for their communities. And I think that's when boards like these and establishments like the MPC and council, that's when it really comes together and works really well, when you have all the pieces, parts talking and working together. And I just appreciate everybody's work with this.
Thank you for that, Ms. Wilson. All right. I think that was our board discussion. So the floor is open for a vote. We're going to start with the city item first.
I make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation to approve.
Bowles, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Emick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The motion carries. Next, we'll move on straight into the county portion of it. Need a motion and second.
Stevens, move to approve staff's recommendations.
Bowles, second.
We're properly moved and seconded. Ms. Amick, how do you vote?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you all for all the hard work in getting that through. All right. Next up, we have map amendment. Rezone from RA to PD at 0 Fort Argyle Road and 1150 Fort Argyle Road.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, Subhashi Karunaratne again. Here is a request for rezoning from RA and RSF6 to PD. We're looking at two properties, one which is in the unincorporated Chatham County, which is a triangular lot, and the other one, which is in the city jurisdiction, is RSF6, and both the lots are going to be used for Argyle Grove plant development. And this right here is their master plan, and this is a 317-acre mixed-use residential and commercial development, and the potential completion date is 2038. The project will have 2,450 residential units at its completion. So the blue tracts marked in blue are single family detached housing, and this purple color, which is not very contrast on the screen, but this tract, this one over here, and the one on the top are residential attached housing, and this red tract is a multifamily land use section, and these two orange rectangles will be commercial, and this brown one will be for mixed use development. And this section would be 24 acres, approximately 24 acres, and the combination of these two commercial tracts would be about 5 acres. And they're also proposing to continue the continuation of New Hampstead Parkway, which is running along over here, and that will be connected to Fort Argyle here at the bottom. And right now, there are the two properties are vacant. There is a borrow pit on the RSS6 zoned lot, and there is a one single family house abutting the RA zoned lot, and there was another single family house closer to the two properties over here. So the petitioner has included a provision in the text reserving the right to continue the surface mining operations until which is labeled here as the existing borrow pit. And the petitioner noted that this mine is currently going through its closeout process, and the ultimate development plan is to turn the excavated area into a water feature. And looking at these two maps, we can see that there's quite some wetlands and flood zones. The 100-year flood zone is shown here in the light blue, and wetlands in green over here. And according to the Coastal Regional Commission's DRI report, the site has is located in an area requiring special attention due to significant natural resources. The applicants have a formal wetland delineation, which is submitted to the U.S. Army Corps. That delineation is not received yet, but they have, the applicant states that all the development would be on high grounds and not in the wetlands. And there will be a 25-foot wetland buffer along the wetlands. And when we look at the future land use map, the plume designation is planned development, so that is consistent. And when we look at the proposed uses, not sure whether you can see all the uses, but there are single family, for residential uses, there are single family detached, attached, structured townhouses, apartments, and mixed used upper story residential proposed here. There are 5 main land use classes, as I showed in the master plan, and the residential uses will be placed on 4 of the land use classes except for the commercial. And every other proposed use listed here will be there in the mixed use and the commercial land uses. And a majority of these uses shows a relation to business neighborhood and business commercial land use classes that's allowed in the City of Savannah zoning, but there are some intense uses like the hospitals, research and testing laboratories, restaurants, gas stations and convenience stores and hotel, over 75 or more rooms. The PD text also states that accessory dwelling units are allowed in the residential detached and attached land use classes, and only 1 accessory dwelling will be permitted. However, the development standards for the ADU is not specified in the PD text. There is a traffic impact analysis submitted with this application, and according to that, the projected traffic is 27,079. And this is a assumption. This is based, this number is a result of an assumption that the commercial tracks 4, 5, and 6 would have sort of strip malls or like a very specific ITE LUC designation. They're not taking into account all these uses listed in their PD text. So in MPC staffs, we've pointed this is only one scenario that could potentially be here on this master plan. But that doesn't say that this is the maximum traffic count that we would see on the roads. However, with their resulting, with the results of the traffic study, they're proposing to mitigate traffic in the first phase with a stop sign that is going to be placed at the junction of the extension of New Hampstead Parkway and the Fort Argyle Road. And when in the future phases, when the development will be more built out, there are signal lights placed at the junctions at Port Argyle and New Hampstead. MPC staff sees that this project is quite suitable for its location, and it's quite a large project and would take quite a long time to be built out, and there are more variables than what we can foresee right now that's going to go into this. So with that being said, there are several additions that we would like to propose for the PD text, starting with more defined alignment with the traffic impact study and the PD text. So that all intensities proposed in the PD text is addressed through that, and maybe reconsidering a mix of uses that is more aligned with the neighborhood character. And also the PD text mentions that the buffer standards will be taken from the City of Savannah zoning ordinance, but there is a statement that it could be the buffer standards could be waived through the petition, the declarant's authority. So MPC staff recommends to adopt the city zoning ordinance, and if there are any variances, to go through the ZBA or through a site plan process. And also there are we recommend that ADUs, the ADU standards for location size and height setbacks are included in the text. So MPC staff recommends continuance to add these into the text.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here to present? Please state your name, and you have 20 minutes if you need it.
Well, good afternoon. My name is William Cunningham with Coleman Company. I'm also joined by Christopher Pease, who's an engineer with our firm, as well as Brian Wardlaw, representing the developer. So I just want to go over some high-level kind of technical items, especially some of the concerns that are brought by MC staff, just so we're on the same page. So to start off, yes, we submitted this for a DRI a few months ago. Lot of, you know, estimates in there on what impervious surface looks like, on what power supply looks like, on storm tension, things like that. So I think you saw that in your report. The Fort Argyle Road section is pending annexation currently, currently in process. Ideally, you know, we'll have that rezoned PD. I would say one benefit of going plan development for a tract this size is the kind of smart development aspect that you can do. You know, for tracts this size, they can often get subdivided out over time, resulting in, you know, not very congruent, you know, drainage patterns, not very congruent traffic patterns, things like that. So this is an effort to kind of do that all in one blow and make sure that it's everything is streamlined as it can be. That also heavily refers to the New Hampstead Parkway extension. That is heavily tied into this project. Moving on, Mr. Pease will touch on this shortly, but obviously there are some low areas in the site. And one thing with you know, to kind of do an all one blow is the benefit of doing a big FEMA study. You know, those A undetermined zones will be determined, for lack of better words, and having those established areas will, you know, be beneficial to Savannah, Chatham County, and all the residents who reside within this PD eventually and surrounding it. Moving on to the concerns by MPC staff, I'll just kind of go one by one, getting with the traffic study. So we submitted a traffic study to the eTrack portal a few weeks ago. We got told that, I guess that got lost in translation, and it was briefly reviewed, I guess, between yesterday afternoon and today. A big sticking point of that was the mixed use character area. We didn't, I guess the study did not include commercial area or commercial characteristics, those multifamily characteristics. This revised study did address those. So, you know, another thing with that is we wanted to make sure that, you know, the uses that can be proposed in the PD text, you know, it's hard to tell what exactly is going to go in this PD at the end of the day. It's a huge property. Commercial properties can vary in terms of their traffic usage, things like that. I'll note that the sub grocery store land use code that we use is about as intense as it gets. It actually made our first traffic study to our second traffic study jump 5,000 trips. So that's just a good estimate. That PD track four also incorporates multifamily, residential, and commercial. So, you know, once you have so much commercial, you can have less residential, you know, back and forth. So just keep that in mind as you evaluate that traffic study. That's also going to be kind of a living document as we progress through each site plan that's submitted through this PD. And, you know, so the traffic needs will be assessed kind of as this develops out. But as you can also see in that, we have kind of three different phases of what that traffic improvements will look like, from stop signage to signalization to full build out, New Hampstead connection, signalization, you know, going north and on Foragot Road. So that'll be a continuing progress, but I'm happy to answer questions about that going forward. For the set of uses, understand there's some concern about a couple of the uses that are listed in there. I can go ahead and say that we're happy to remove the uses of outside animal storage and research labs. Those were just kind of drawn over from a PD we were basing this off of, so we're happy to remove those items. In terms of the hospital and the hotel over 74 rooms, we'd be happy also to make those specific ones that y'all feel are more intense need to be brought back for approval, if that's something that I think would hold up, you know, moving this project forward. So if that's something we can discuss, that'd be great. But we want to make sure that we are cognizant that we want this to feel like a neighborhood business section, and that, you know, it's a spot that residents can come enjoy and, you know, walk around and feel like it's part of the whole community. For number three, the refinement of the PD text. So this one I want to, I guess, clarify. I don't know if there's some mistranslation. Everything for major amendments, minor amendments, variances in this at the minimum requires MPC staff approval. All of them do also require written consent of the declarant, just to make sure that everything's uniform and nothing rogue, you know, coming in and taking place in this development. You know, for high level, you know, amendments to this text or the master plan, that will require mayor and alderman approval. For variances for individual site plans, that will require ZBA approval. For other things stipulated in here, requires staff approval. So just want to make that known. Also, that green space stipulation, that was removed. That's not in the text that you guys have in this application. After meeting with the city, we decided that it is confusing. And so we wanted to stipulate that it was only buffers or wetlands or things like that that would constitute those commercial development standards. Lastly, the ADU definition, that was also an addition to the text that we have at the city. We're also happy to take that out. Or if you want it in and we can include, you know, has to abide by the UDO in it, that's fine. We're not super picky about that. Let me check one more thing. You know, just the ongoing theme that this is, you know, supposed to be a good benefit for the city. Supply housing, smart commercial growth, smart residential growth, extension up to New Hampstead Parkway, just an effort to, you know, have smart development. So I'll pass it on to Mr. Pease and then Mr. Wardlaw.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. This I am Christopher Pease, one of the engineers at Coleman Company, along with Mr. Neil McKenzie on this project. I'll just touch briefly on some of the engineering components that go along with this. As far as utilities go, water and sewer, there's an existing water main on New Hampstead Parkway that we plan to extend through the development to serve it. For sewer, there's an existing gravity main on New Hampstead Parkway that for the initial phase we plan to connect to. That will be a phased approach. As additional phases come online, we will plan to reroute that sewer towards the east through the McClendon Track development across the easement. The lift station that is currently proposed as part of that development will be a regional lift station and has already accounted for the flow from this site. With regard to stormwater, the I think it was mentioned previously, the borrow pit that's on the site will be used as the master detention pond for this development. There are Zone A and AE present on the site, and we have already done an existing flood analysis for this project and determined a base flood elevation already. And we will continue to work with that analysis as we move further into design. With regard to wetlands, there's, I think it was mentioned as well, the JD is in progress. We've delineated those wetlands, and the jurisdictional determination is pending core review and final determination. I think William touched pretty well on the traffic, but I'll just run back through it. The initial phase is going to be stop control. That is the plan. Up until the density warrants the signal at the connection to Fort Argyle Road, as well as the connection to New Hampstead. The plan is to provide four-lane width along that extension up until the commercial point, and then two-lane beyond that up until where New Hampstead currently exists. That's it.
Hey, good afternoon, Council. Sorry, let me put this on. Appreciate Coleman. They went over everything pretty well. I just wanted, as the developer, Brian Wardlaw with Landmark 24, to come up and say thank you for your time, for hearing us out. On the developer and the builder side, you know, we just want to build a cohesive product and a cohesive neighborhood and community that brings everything together. What we've seen in Savannah with the housing shortage, we're trying to supply a stock and everything that comes into that with different types and varieties, price points for people to be able to live in. This corridor has been marked for type of housing that's been identified in this application. We feel it's a great fit for this area. We feel that the extension of New Hampstead Parkway will be a great addition with taking traffic off of Fort Argyle, being able to, you know, that corridor opening up to Little Neck Road, the accessibility on the mixed use and commercial side. We really want to bring something to the New Hampstead area, grocers, shopping, food, retail. Just we've, I think, set a precedent in the past, showing what we've done in the area and what we brought to the area and what we can do. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you have, and so will Coleman. So thank you so much.
Okay. Any questions for the petitioner? Ms. Wilson?
I do. So the a couple of questions. If this is continued, I think I heard someone say this, but would y'all be willing to come back with a come back with the permitted use table with the things struck out that are the more intense uses that y'all are not looking to do?
After the statements, I think we were hoping to have them as a conditional approval without a continuance, stating that all the items that we've seen as a heavy use on the commercial side that have reflected as being shown as a concern by staff, as the cutting, you know, any units in a hotel over 74, the hospital, all those being conditions that have to be come back and be approved by the MPC and then the city of Savannah, made condition to approvals, if that could be something
that would be permitted by right for any of those uses. So, and then some of them are high intense uses that don't really align with residential, and also high intense uses that cause, more traffic. And I know I would feel more comfortable if I had something in writing that says, you know, we don't intend to, like, for example, one of the things that, that I was surprised to see in business neighborhood and that zoning district was light manufacturing. When we have a separate zoning district of light industrial, which is intended for light manufacturing, I don't know why light manufacturing would be under business neighborhood. I think maybe since we have some city staff here and of course Mr. Melder, maybe that's something that the city could take a look at as you know, why is light manufacturing in the business neighborhood permitted by right in that district? But so I would feel more comfortable with a list that says, okay, these are things that we would like to have the opportunity to do, and these are things that we're not looking to do if this is continued. And the second thing that I wanted to ask, the traffic study outlined several changes and lane modifications to help with traffic. I think something that happened with the New Hampstead project on the Little Neck side is all of New Hampstead was approved before any commitments to road improvements were made. And that area, as far as infrastructure, road infrastructure, was way behind the eight ball. I mean, it is just now getting some improvements that should have happened and right in line with development. So the traffic study, so I wouldn't want to see that on the Fort Argyle side. And then especially since y'all will be, traffic from your development will be going off onto Little Neck Road, which is very congested. The modifications for the traffic study would be to add a left turn lane and a right turn lane onto 204, install a traffic signal at 204 and site access, add a dual left lane turn, a left lane on the northbound of Little Neck Road, and construct a channelized right turn lane on eastbound New Hampstead Parkway, restripe the Highgate Boulevard approach, convert one westbound thorough lane on New Hampstead Parkway. And these modifications prevent those areas from moving to a level of service from E and D to an F. So are y'all willing to implement what the traffic study says is needed for that development?
Yes, ma'am. We're currently working on a development agreement with the city of Savannah for that build out. And that is currently being vetted and being studied by the, attorneys, everybody. So that's currently being worked on. Another part of that is also the phasing of the communities and the entire build out as well. So as those certain pods, if you will, come online and certain units are there, each phase will trigger, if you will, a different part that will be needed to make sure the grades stay sustainable to Fort Argyle and it maintains that level of service, so nothing is at failure.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions for the petitioner? All right, we've got a few speaker cards here. Thank you, sir. First up, we have Connie Shreve. Just state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
My name is Connie Shreve. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm a representative for Savannah Ogeechee Canal, and we're glad to be here tonight. Number one, just this should not go through zoning tonight because there were too many problems with the application and informing the community. So I did come to the meeting the other night at 6:19, and there wasn't a meeting. Other people went by and took pictures of the door, and then somebody talked to the lady at the county that was locking up the door that said Mr. Wardlaw had been there. We got that invitation the day before at Savannah Ogeechee Canal. Now, I don't know who else was notified. We did know about it because we'd found out from Miss Sally Helm here at MPC. But the thing was, they were trying to have a meeting with all of our community, and it wasn't going to be till May 1st. That was communicated with Mr. Wardlaw. There was big confusion. Nobody knew when anything was going to happen. And then another wrong date went out to one person. So that they thought the meeting was on the 17th. Okay. I mean, on the 7th. And then it was on the 17th. But tonight there should be no zoning, rezoning at all, because it wasn't even done correctly. The whole rezoning application, they sent in the wrong maps. Then they sent in MPC said it wasn't the wrong map, but they said it was the wrong map. So then they sent in more maps. We don't know if a survey has been done there. I would like to know that. That surface mining operation has been affecting the Savannah Ogeechee Canal for years, and the city is aware of it. So is the Georgia EPD, who actually has them on a consent order. They don't have a permit right now. They are on a consent order. They have paid fines for putting acid mining drainage in Savannah Ogeechee Canal, which led right to the Ogeechee River. Damon Mullis is on a sabbatical right now with the whole Ogeechee River group, but I have all the documentation for the damages that were done from the surface mining operation, and none of the surface mining operation information was even in the packet. So the packet has already been introduced a couple of times and was not correct. So at this point, we don't know what is correct. Tonight, one of these guys said that there was going to be a big flood study. Then the other one got up and said there's already been a flood study. But we know that nobody's done a flood study on the wetlands behind that have been affecting us. And there's a lot of wetlands that come behind this property. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Shreve.
I wasn't through. If I got a minute. The ordinance is here.
Wrap it up quickly. Your time is done, but I'll give you another 30 seconds if you can.
You're breaking your own ordinances if you allow this rezoning tonight.
Ms. Bowles, you have a
Thank
question.
You for listening to me.
Hold on, Ms. Shreve, you have a question for Ms. Bowles.
Can I just talk about a flood study as well as some stormwater management? Are there existing flooding? Is there existing flooding area?
Yes, ma'am. We are being flooded on a small rain, okay? We're being flooded in our whole museum yard, our whole parking lot. The canal has been affected so much from the surface mining operation that it appears, you can see it from 204 with your own eyes, it appears that a dump truck came and just kept backing and dumping sand from where the surface mine comes on to Bush Road, the water from the surface mining operation. And the man only shut the pumps off on September 11th because I called him. He didn't shut it down because the city knew about it. He didn't shut it down because the EPD knew about it. The Ogeechee Riverkeeper knew about it. I asked him to shut it down because it was killing everything. We had no macro invertebrate in the canal at all. None. the riverkeeper came to the canal after I kept saying there was a big problem. And they were like, what in the world's going on with the water? It was the surface mine in operation. It's not even in their packet. This isn't even the way you introduce a development. It's already going wrong. And we hope that you will not pass a rezoning tonight with this little bit of information. Your own ordinances say you consider the historic character of the area.
I do need to move on to the next speaker.
Okay, but you're breaking your own ordinances. I'm just telling you. You're not reading your own ordinances.
I've got Charles and Deborah Barry. Barney.
Good afternoon. I'm Charles Barry. Thanks for having me. I represent the community known as Fort Argyle Club Landings, Inc. We're a small landlocked property on Fort Argyle Lane, which is directly off Highway 204 Fort Argyle Road. I'm here tonight because my community has asked me to represent them, and we have many concerns. A lot of them echo the lady that was just up here. Also, the map that we got, she's correct, the original map that was mailed to the few of us that received them actually included the entire property adjacent to the Ogeechee River and all the way to 204 and down. At the development meeting, we found out that that wasn't true, that it was only the parcel on 204, which made us feel a little better. But first off, drainage and the watershed is definitely a concern because that's wetlands. I live on the Ogeechee River. I live with the river. I have been in water the past 20 years, my share. So I understand what water and watershed can do to the community. We have a landlocked easement, which we maintain ourselves, no county help. We pay taxes, and we jokingly say that the only taxes we get for our representation is the flyovers during mosquito season. That's it. Okay, but we pay you taxes. So the traffic with the study that I saw shows 27,000 cars on 24-hour two-lane. That is my assumption is a forecast. Well, consider this. You have corporate or commercial. You have two RV parks. You have two active sand mines on Highway 204, all of which commercial traffic uses that stretch of road. At 6 o'clock in the morning, you can't get out of Fort Argyle Lane onto Highway 204 today. So any development that needs to be done, especially if it's all futuristic traffic study, that road needs to be four-laned before you consider your turn lanes, your stop signals, and the things that you assume is going to handle the traffic you forecast. So there's a lot of things wrong with this. And so I'm standing here saying you should say no, that this could be a continuation, maybe until you can get a better traffic study or a handle on what you're going to do with the water that's going to be shed from these developments.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Appreciate it. Next, we have Annette Hickey, who is online. Ms. Hickey, if you will unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon.
Sir, we're waiting for a speaker online right now. And if you'd like to speak, you need to fill out a blue speaker card and give it to Ms. Helms over here.
I'm hard of hearing, and that's a little bit muffled.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can you hear me?
Are you there?
Yes.
Ms. Hickey, if you are there, you may go ahead.
Are you there?
Yes.
Are you there? I am so sorry. I would love to be there today, but I had prior engagements. I could not be there today. So I wasn't going to be there. Can you hear me?
Yes, just please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Annette Hickey, and if everyone could just maybe pull it, I'll be real fast on this. I'm not sure if you guys have read any of my emails. No response has been coming back, but real short and sweet. Due to the significant communication issues and lack of effective community engagement from the developer, Landmark 24, I request that a rezoning for the Fort Argyle Road project be postponed and not considered until after our scheduled meeting of May 1st, 2026, which was sent over to Brian and all kinds of people, 25, 30 people, and no response except for be at my meeting and no telling, no come talk to you, come visit you, nothing. As a lifelong resident, adjacent property owner, and licensed realtor for over 35 years of experience, I'm officially listed as the community leader on the application. Carrie was first. We don't know Carrie Beaver, period. She has not approached us with this project, et cetera. So I'm listed on the application. Despite this, the developer has failed to coordinate effectively with the community. Previous meeting attempts occurred with little to no notice, resulting in zero attendance. And the current application remains vague, lacking required legal descriptions, recorded plat maps, and sand mining rezoning details. And I'll tell you, I live the adjacent property owner in an old Savannah brick house with over 15,000 old Savannah bricks on it. Beautiful, gorgeous porches, what's cascading the whole property. And no one has came out. You could put my toe over that property line. And Brian has not, or the whole team, no one has even came to say, hey, let me come meet with you. Let's talk about this or anything, nothing. So I'm just requesting, I'm out of town. We have zero communication going on. And, you know, just everybody's a very hostile environment. I don't mind working with you guys, Brian, and your dad and all them. I worked for Alvin Davis and all them for 30-something years, building houses with them. And, you know, we all know each other. I don't know your kids. I'm trying to work with them. But it's like I can't work with somebody with zero communication when it's at my back door. And as far as the sand mine operation, when you look overhead at 1062 Fort Argyle Road, you guys, you can zoom in. I've been putting up with this dirt being dumped on me for 10 to 15 years. Everything's been going great with the first pit. When Mr. Granger did that pit, he had the decency to come to people's house and work with them, okay? This pit has been a disaster from MPC approval, which is file number 18-005935. You know, I agree to, okay, y'all can go ahead and dig some more dirt out, okay? They did come to me, but did they do anything? No, they didn't even, they didn't build a new road. They decided to rent the road and build the road across the wetlands in the back. Okay. Disturb them. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Granger, if you'd like to speak, just state your name for the record, please. And you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. And I'm sorry for the interruption that didn't flow with your order, but Mr. Chairman and Commission, I'm here not to get into a long conversation, but to just let you know that I own 24
acres. I'm sorry, just for formality, state your name for the record.
I own 24 acres adjoining this rezoning request, and it's on... Oh, I thought I did that. You call me Mr. Granger. So my name is Bill Granger. Thank you. You keep me straight. If you keep me straight, we'll be fine. But I need all the help I can get. But like I started to say, I own 24 acres adjoining this rezoning request, and it's on the southeastern side of the property that comes down to Fort Argyle Road, but you've got a recommendation, which is a continuance, and that pretty much says it all, and there's no need for me to go through it because you've read it, I'm sure, and you've looked at it, but there's a lot of clarification that hasn't been done, and you could go through here and pick out five or six things that related to my property And I would just hope that we would get a continuance and get a neighborhood meeting so we could go over these and see just exactly how they plan to handle the infrastructure, the drainage, and the wetlands and the borders. And thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. All right. I don't have any more speaker cards, so if the petitioner would like to come up and offer a rebuttal.
Thank you. I'm just trying to go quick by them. As far as the community meetings, we were notified by the MPC on who to contact for the first meeting, which we held. We had that meeting. There were only a handful of meetings. We were told to contact Ms. Carrie Bieber, which we did. There were about five attendees in which Ms. Hickey was there. There was an MPC attendant there as well. We thought the meeting went fine, even though there wasn't many attendees there when all notifications were sent out as a process of MPC. Then we were contacted to have another meeting. We sent out notices to have the meeting on April 17th. Then we were notified that another meeting date was wanting to happen on May 1st. The notices were already sent out. We didn't see a need to cancel the meeting because the notices were sent out, and I'm kind of the mind the more meetings, the better. The more information that can be shared, the better. So we held that meeting last Friday, which is where I got the chance to meet the president. So I can verify the meeting was there because I got to speak with the president of the lower association. So I thought the meeting went well, even though everybody has concerns of the project. The information got to be shared, and I thought it went well. And we have said that we will be there at the May 1st meeting with the other individuals. I would just hope that if the vote goes through, the meeting is a condition to going through to council. Since we've already held the two mandatory meetings for MPC, that we are fine having a third meeting, but just a condition to before the meeting for the city council meeting. Have no problem going to the May 1st meeting, and we've already notified them that we would be there. So just wanted to address that one. The surface mining, there are two surface mines in that area. The larger one, we don't have anything to do with the surface mines. We just bought the property. The one we are referring to is the smaller mine, which is being closed out now. How those surface mines could close out, it's a two-year seasonal process. It is not an overnight process with the Georgia EPD, so it takes some time for them to close out. They have to work the site, work the slopes, stabilize, they inform the EPD, and then that two-year period starts. But that's currently what they're doing. They're working the site. The larger pit, we do not have any contact or anything to do with those. They're not a part of our project. Just wanted to put that there. The flood study is being done. The wetland studies are being done. Those are normally taken care of at all the times of permitting, when land disturbance permits are being done, but those are, being worked out now on the front end so we can have those worked on before any clearing or anything is done before time. Surveys have been done. We've walked the property topos. So again, all that has to be done by time of land disturbance permitting. I believe the main thing is drainage. Everyone understands that drainage is a big portion. Again, we are not disturbing the land south of Fort Argyle Road. All of that is still retained by the Lewis family, and it's a large portion of the family, portion of the land that the speaker is back into. That's the land that touches the river. We are on the north side of Fort Argyle. We are not adjacent to any canals, any of that. So I just wanted to point that out, that we're on the north side. We are not tearing any trees down or anything on the south side. And again, the traffic, we're working through that right now with the development agreement, and it'll be done in phases, and they'll be able to be spaced out with traffic lights. And as the new homes come on, it's not a day one, here's 2,400 homes. It's going to be a build out till 2038. It's going to be a long process. So. Thank you.
Ms. Jarrett, did you have a question?
Yes. I was hoping that I could get a little bit more information on the drainage. You say that it all flows south, or that the south is where the river is, but yours flows into that, doesn't it?
Christopher Pease. So as part of the design going forward, we will be doing a full drainage study, a full study along with the design that will go along with the information we have now. We have done an existing flood study at the moment and have determined some base flood elevations, but everything will be, you know, that's just the foundation of it. We will be going through a full drainage study that will ultimately get submitted.
Are you adjacent to the Savannah-Ogeechee Canal?
Yes.
Yes. No? We don't know?
Good afternoon. I'm Neil McKenzie, also with Coleman. We're not adjacent. So we're about a half mile west of Bush Road. The stormwater runs through what's called Belford Creek. We have defined the base flood elevations of Belford Creek, and our analysis runs to Belford Road, and that's where it ends. Belford Road is upstream of the SNO, so it all does drain there eventually. And we can analyze that down to the SNO, but it's a long reach that goes through Belford Creek. So our analysis as of now stops at the culvert of Belford Road, but we can look at points east, you know, and, you know,
is your flood study going to FEMA?
Yes, ma'am. It'll have to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then also, so when we do this master stormwater plan, I understand there may be some flooding in the area. You know, we can account for that and make sure that we don't do any downstream harm with the plan that we have. We do have a large stormwater, you know, pond, you know, on the site that will have a lot of volume that we can help retain and you know, meet pre-development, you know, rates.
More than 33% of the developable area will be impermeable, right? I saw that.
Subject to the site plans, right.
A lot of impervious area.
So the
especially in a floodplain and with wetlands all around.
So our on-site stormwater management plan will have to account for all those impervious areas. And we'll have enough attention on site to manage that.
You feel like the neighborhoods or the neighbors got an opportunity to see the plan and share their thoughts and feelings?
I would be glad to share my hydrology study with the neighborhood. That's not a problem.
Okay. And the rest of the development, would they be willing to share that with the neighbors that were unable to attend the meeting so far? I heard May 1st. And if we're doing a May 1st meeting, can we just wait until after the meeting so that we can get a better idea of how the residents feel?
So to clarify, my stormwater study will
understood.
Be done until
understood.
We do engineering plans, but I can provide some detailed mapping of what's going on, you know, in the area to present at that meeting.
I understand. I think that the residents all together, though, wanted to see the entire as much of the development as you have envisioned at this point. And it sounds like there's just been confusion about when the meeting date was and where the meeting date was, and that the residents haven't really had a good, solid opportunity to weigh in on what's going on out there.
Sure. At the next public meeting, I'll be glad to prepare some maps to kind of lay it all out, and so we can explain what the impact of our development will have.
That would be wonderful.
Any more questions from the board? Yes, Ms. Wilson.
I do. In your drainage study, are y'all going to take into account the large drainage study that was done by, I believe, CETA and the city, or maybe the county took over that? But I think that area along Fort Argyle, along Old River Road, up against the river, and over into that next basin, and where all that drains through Horsepen Swamp and down through the Little Geechee, has big downstream conveyance problems. The county and the city need to step up and clean that out and blow out those culverts. But you're not going to be able to get an accurate picture of what your drainage is going to do on your property when everything downstream is blocked up. Also, you're not going to be able to get a picture of your drainage if you do not take into account you can't prevent the river from flooding, and it goes over Fort Argyle Road, over Old River Road, and into that next basin. And I can't emphasize strongly enough, when we see these developments come online, and so many have been approved, they're not taking into account problems of downstream conveyance. And once this is approved and developed, nobody's going back and because they're approved and they got the houses built, nobody's going back and saying, oh my gosh, you know, things are working well within our site, but off site people are flooding because of the downstream conveyance. And their rate might be the volume and the rate might be the same, but because it's being blocked up, people are underwater.
Yes, ma'am. And that's a great point. We understand downstream conditions do impact a lot of things upstream. And so in a case like that, we do work with the county and Savannah with their models. So they have master models of how these, you know, how the basins work. We do take those models as our baseline. So we'll build off of that. As far as the condition of the downstream conveyance, we can help to identify problems when we do our analysis. We can't really go downstream and fix, you know, anything, but we can help show what the problems are, and our models will reflect that. FEMA does have some modeling in the area. So we always use those base flooding, you know, elevation maps from them that they published as, you know, as our baseline. And then we build off of that. The West Chatham drainage study that you referred to is a baseline that we use, especially, so we're a little bit to the west of it, but it does all kind of flow to the same place. So we would also use that as a baseline. And then what we've done with the county is have them plug in our development, and then they'll have that, you know, in their model. So we do work with the municipalities to help keep these models as live and as, you know, as accurate as it can be, based on the conditions of the downstream culverts and you know, all the crossings. So that is a work in progress, and we will continue to do that.
Okay.
Great. Anything else? Any discussion? Discussion or motion?
Motion.
I'll open the floor for motion.
Move to continue until the issues.
Do we have a date? May 12th.
Okay, until May 12th.
Right.
Bowles, second.
It's been properly moved and second. We'll go to a vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes, the motion carries. And we continue to May 12th.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could we please have somebody announce, because the president of that neighborhood and a few other people have asked, the time and location of that May 1st meeting, just so that we have it on the record, please?
Do we have a time and a date for that May 1st meeting? Or date and location? Please step to the microphone so that anyone listening online can hear as well. It's okay. It's their meeting.
Pardon me.
Oh. The meeting will be May 1st at South Newington Church at 6 to 7.
And Ms. Warlock, would you please commit to being at that meeting?
Yeah. How many were at that last meeting you're talking about?
Yes, sir. I'll be in attendance.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I would like to know.
So the motion has passed, and that item is taken care of. The next thing we have is presentations, which we don't have any. We have other business, which is the transition for intake of applications.
What's that? Oh, I see.
Good afternoon. My name is Faye DeMassimo, and I'm the Chief of Planning and Economic Development for the City of Savannah. It's good to be with you this afternoon. We're going to have a discussion. Bridget's going to go into – Bridget Liddy, our Director of Planning and Urban Design, is going to go through the details of this. But I wanted to give a brief introduction to some work that we've been doing with the MPC on clarifying roles to improve service delivery. And I want to start by thanking Melanie and all of the staff that have worked so closely with us over some months now to make sure that we were really getting this right and improving the effectiveness of the program for everyone. The purpose and key outcomes were to improve our processes, to clarify roles, align with the Savannah GPS strategic plan, a very important effort and really our North Star for everything we do in the city. Strengthen collaboration and accountability, and have better service delivery for applicants and the public, reduce any overlap or confusion that might exist in processes, and clear roles without changing approval authority. So, again, I mentioned GPS. GPS is indeed such an important part of our business processes and everything that we do at the city now. It's our core values. And goal six is about always being a high-performing government. And we saw this effort as really being a key part of that. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Bridget, and she's going to walk through some of the details of these changes. And, again, we want to thank both the MPC leadership and the MPC staff for working so diligently on this with us.
Hello again, Bridget Liddy, Planning and Urban Design with the City of Savannah. And so I'm basically going to talk a little bit about what current services are being handled by the Metropolitan Planning Commission staff as well as the City of Savannah, and then talk a little bit about how we are potentially making these changes to help streamline services, as what Chief DeMassimo was talking about. So through our contract with MPC staff, including the executive director, serves as the city's professional planning agency, providing the following services. Development services, basically reviewing subdivision and providing final administrative authority on those. Discretionary review processes, and that's basically supporting the Planning Commission and the Zoning Board of Appeals with the reviews for rezoning, comp plan amendments. The list is there. Advanced planning. Comp plan, which is kind of comp plan season right now, and historic preservation. So all of the review boards, Historic Preservation Commission, Historic District Review Board, the Historic District Board of Review for downtown, and then the Chatham County Historic Sites and Monuments Commission. As far as the City of Savannah goes, some of the current services that we provide have to do with ordinance interpretation, which is something that we do when we issue zoning confirmation letters or when we have items come down the pipeline when we're reviewing different zoning actions. We also provide policy interpretation as well as revisions to ordinances. You all just approved an item today that had to do with the industrial buffers. That's something that we work on as far as the policy piece goes. And we also do construction permit review, which includes building permits and site permits. And then we also dig a little bit deeper into some business permits, which include the short-term vacation rentals, everybody's favorite, as well as business location approvals, alcoholic beverage licenses, et cetera. We also, this is a big one, accept applications for rezoning activities. So those comp plan amendments, rezonings, text amendments, et cetera, Zoning Board of Appeals applications, they all come through our office. And we review them to make sure that they are complete before we send them over here. And then we also assist with providing the public notification when we have to notify people when the zoning action comes around. So that includes signage, that includes sending letters out, and that also includes putting an ad in the paper. And then we also work on small area plans. The Civic Legacy, I'm sure many of y'all have seen that in the paper lately, as well as the Canal District Master Plan. The Bear Grounds, which is a plan development that y'all recently approved, as well as Dawes Avenue. So those are the types of things that we are looking at with the City of Savannah services that we provide. Now, as far as proposed changes go that we're looking at, I had mentioned the application process. What we're looking at doing is taking that intake arm and moving it over to the MPC. In addition to that, once that comes over, MPC staff will then review to determine whether or not those applications are complete, meaning they can be heard by the respective boards, as well as once the applications come over here, having MPC staff handle all the public notification processes that are accompanying that. We feel with NUZO, when it was set up, we tried to streamline it where we had us accepting the applications, payments, et cetera. But after going through that, there's a lot of confusion from the public as far as where do we go to submit an application? Why am I talking to MPC and then I have to go to the city to submit the application, et cetera. So we're trying to streamline it. We're trying to make the system work better for us. So this would apply to the various applications listed on your screen. As far as the city goes, we'll continue to do policy development and ordinance interpretation, stuff that you see us doing, as well as work on special projects. One of the things that we are going to become involved with has to do with the pre-meetings. And we're actually, right now, MPC staff has a pre-meeting with the applicant when there is a rezoning matter. What we're doing right now is our staff is actually participating in those pre-meetings to ensure that if there is an interpretation of the zoning ordinance, we are able to provide that on the spot in order to save time for the applicant to move through the system. And if we need to issue a zoning confirmation letter following that pre-meeting, we can go ahead and do that for the record. Fortunately, that's already happening now, which is great. So we're able to move things much more rapidly. And once again, streamline services and deliver better services for our community. So what stays the same? Nothing changes with the boards, authorities, and commissions. Like, you all will continue doing what you normally do. It's more the administrative piece, the back end. We will continue to do our permit reviews when it comes to construction and site plan reviews. And then we will also retain authority when it comes to the initiation of rezoning and text amendments with the Planning Commission review only when directed by City Council. This rarely happens. It would be potentially a public safety issue or an issue that we have to address legally when that would actually come into play. That's already in the ordinance now. But no changes with that. And then for the public, once again, where applications are sent or brought in and where payments go, the good news is when COVID happened, we kind of went electronic. So what we want to do is kind of push people to use our InterGov system so it becomes seamless for everyone. But we wouldn't be accepting applications at the City of Savannah. They would come here to the MPC if someone wanted to physically drop one off. A more streamlined process and predictable process for the applicant and clear points of contact so they know who they're going to be talking to throughout the process from coming to you all and then going to City Council or going to the ZBA, et cetera. So as far as our proposed next steps go, what we would like to do is go ahead and present to you all our revisions to the ordinance that would kind of start this process of us transitioning to this new role where we're having applications being accepted here as well as the public notification requirements occurring. And then we would go ahead and work and collaborate with staff to do training throughout the months of May and June. And then with June 14th, the tentative date, it would be considered, the revisions would be considered by City Council. And then with July 1, potential implementation would occur. And with that implementation, we would also build in an opportunity for our staff to collaborate and support MPC staff as we go through this transition, because it's going to be a pretty large lift. But we're confident that we can do it. We've had several meetings over the last year, kind of talk about it and identify where those issues are and what we can do to bridge that divide. So that's the conclusion of the presentation. If you have any questions, I'll be honored to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Liddy, and I appreciate you guys working on this and working with us and communicating with us. I do have a few concerns, and a couple of the main ones that I've had, and I expressed this when we met with Mr. City Manager, the city-initiated amendments not going before MPC. It was expressed that that already occurs now through the ordinance, but it did seem like it was a written change in the documents that we received. I just have a concern with that. And it could create less streamlining if it goes before city council and city council, as they often do, say, we would like to hear from MPC. And then that pushes it back to our timeline. And then we have to get that on the agenda and then go back to city council. So I'm not clear on what you mentioned, it being a public safety issue, what in a zoning or text amendment would be a public safety issue that would circumvent it from coming before a public hearing here at MPC.
So I'll take that question, okay, if you don't mind, Mr. Yeah. Chairman. So obviously the city council is the elected body mm-hmm. of the city. They're elected by the citizens. They make the decisions for all zoning matters, even when they come from this body. The current ordinance states the same, that city council for city-initiated petitions may ask MPC to review and may keep that decision without an MPC review. And this is the same, but it's often a misunderstood ordinance. You'll see that for this change, we're coming before the MPC. We've come before the MPC for housing density bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. The city council wants the MPC process, but the city council also wants to retain its authority as city council to be able to amend the zoning ordinance, which is their responsibility, if they see the need to.
Yeah,
I think so. So let's not confuse what city council does versus what city staff does. So city council is the legislative body and they make the decisions here. And that's exactly what this amendment, states their power is.
I understand that. We as board members serve as appointees of these elected officials. So I'm certainly not trying to undermine the elected officials' authority to have the final say, but we are kind of the protective barrier for those elected officials, kind of a filter for hearing public input into these things. And I just want to make sure that in an effort to make things more efficient, that we are not becoming less transparent with the community. And making sure that we are doing our roles as appointees by these elected officials by giving them the best advice, recommendations that we can, filtered through our staff, city staff, county staff, MPC staff, as well as the public that has an opportunity to be heard once before it gets to city council. Because often it is very intimidating, I've done it myself, to go into those city hall chambers and have your 2 minutes of time to try to plead your case. I think that having that happen here first allows us to kind of make the concerns more concise and give a strong recommendation from those of us that are working on behalf of those elected representatives.
Yeah.
The other concern that I had, and I really appreciate the presentation because I think that this is something that's good for the entire board to have heard, to see kind of what we've been discussing and working on. Of course, you know, once we get to the point of voting, the devil's in the details. We'll want to see the nitty gritty of everything. Let's see, I made one more. So just for the main takeaway here is that we are going to be picking up the intake of applications. And I think that makes sense. It's something that we've been talking about for many years, that this is the front doorstep for development here. I want to make sure, and I'm sure this is something that's already been discussed, that budgetary considerations have been taken into account for all the additional noticing expenses that will be on this side. I think that some of these things probably are already starting to happen and could be happening now without necessarily the ordinance reading having to happen. But I will leave that to the professional staff to deal with. The July 1st implementation is a target, but I do want to say, with all of the staff working on the amendment to the future
comp plan.
The comp plan, yes. Sorry, that includes future land use, et cetera. The comp plan, that we are doing our best to hit these deadlines, but just understand that if it does get pushed back a month, that is something that I know is not out of the realm of possibility. But I definitely want any of the other board members to chime in with any concerns or questions or comments that they have.
Well, I always like to dumb it down so I can figure it out. You know, I've always thought of the MPC as the front door of development, and actually over time that's improved. It used to be who you knew and what you knew, and that's how you got things done. It wasn't, and actually the MPC was something to be circumvented, and that seems to have changed. And I want to be clear that really right now we're just talking about applications. We're not talking about the subsequent ordinance that all of those changes will address. It seems like we're putting the cart before the horse, right? We're taking and moving the applications to one spot, an intake of one spot. And then based on what we think will happen as a result of that, we're making subsequent changes to the ordinance. And I want to make sure that although we have this idea of what's going to happen with the intake of applications, it may not actually happen that way. And if we make an ordinance based on what we think is going to happen, not on what actually does happen, then we're putting the cart before the horse. So I would like to make sure that what we're talking about here is just the applications and not the subsequent ordinance of what you want to do as a result of that.
So I would say this, the intake of the applications is one part of it, and the public notification is also another part of it. To be clear, it's those two pieces. And we have to change the ordinance because that language is in the ordinance based on state law. So just to be clear on that.
I do want to be fiscally mindful that MPC does not end up biting off more than they have the money to chew. So I'm sure that there have been discussions about that and, you know, additional costs and that type of thing. I'm hoping that we can work through that easily enough. I am very, very pleased that the applicants will have one place to go. One of the things that I've heard from applicants is that they kind of play us off of each other. You know, if mama says no, then they go to daddy and see if daddy says yes. And this will stop that and provide a more cohesive and hopefully more integrated. And the fact that we're meeting together, I think, is a wonderful thing as well. It needs to be a joint cooperation. I personally would like to see the more input from the city services in applications like the one we had today, where there's huge changes going to happen. You know, it would be helpful to hear or to see that engineering has taken a look at it and they're pretty much okay with it. And yes, the DRI speaks to it to a certain extent, but we don't get DRIs in most of our applications. And my past experience was that each of the departments would have a say in it before it went to planning commission. So the planning commissioners had an opportunity to see what the department said and get feedback as well. And I know that's way beyond the scope of what we're talking about, but it would certainly be beneficial to me.
I
thank you very much for moving forward with this. And I do understand that schedules may slide a little bit, but.
And I do like want to address like what was one of the agenda items today too. I think a lot of the time, in the process, we want as much information up front as possible, but some of these things have to move through the processes before they get to that next level. And I love when we give the community all the details, but sometimes that's not the order of operations for the development. But, Mr. Melder, you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to hit on that. I mean, I think it's a wonderful goal to be able to have as much information, but I think the zoning and entitlement process is to define what is appropriate, and then the site plan reviews and the engineering reviews and the traffic reviews and the stormwater reviews is about what's possible and what's allowable by code. And so that's, you know, when zoning is set, that's the binding constraint, and then it's further reduced there often when these developers are trying to meet code, which is fairly comprehensive as well.
Thank you for that. Any other comments?
Just to clarify, I'm not asking that they meet code. I just would like to have their input.
Absolutely.
You know, how does this look? Do you think that we have enough sewer capacity?
Absolutely. I just think that sometimes and it's not always our opportunity to do so, but we don't always let the community know that what they're asking for is not at this step in the process. That we shouldn't necessarily not vote on something based off of them wanting something that's further down the line in the process. Ms. Bowles, did you have anything?
And I just wanted to say, add one thing. I've got some of my staff members here. If they could just stand up. They're very much committed to making sure that this transition, if and when it does happen, hopefully it will happen. But they are committed to making sure that they're available to assist in any way.
We appreciate it.
Yep.
We appreciate past and present staff, and we've had a bit of that today, Mr. Lotson. Yes, and I want to say thank you to our staff as well for working closely with everybody to try to make this transition smooth. Well, if nobody has anything else, motion to adjourn, anyone?
Good news.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right.